And now, some important words from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation, an engagement of services to be offered, and only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Here we are. Here I am. Let's get to it. Lots going on in the world of finance, and we need to talk about it so we can help you figure out what to do about your finances. Now, let's get straight to it with Mr. Scott Connor.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
I'm all business today, Scott.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're kind of glowing.
I am glowing. What do you mean?
I mean, our listeners can't see it, but you have like a glow to you.
Well,
You're like bronzed or something.
All right. Well, I don't think the makeup artist got all the makeup off. You're not funny. I'm doing a show, ladies and gentlemen, so you heard it here first. There'll be more news coming out. But in addition to the radio, we want to make sure that people have every opportunity to get their fill of Real Money with David Holland. So we will be starting very soon, beginning of February, we'll be starting a television show.
And you've been working hard at it.
We have. And so we spent the bulk of the day working on that. And yeah, it's good stuff. And I think people are going to like it.
And I'm glad to say I'm not in it.
Well, why don't you tell us something that people will like as it relates to the world of finance?
I'll do that. The Dow was up on Friday's market another 96 points. Just another nice, soft, easy day. Now, most of that was IBM. And you can see the difference there because the S&P was up 0.8%, virtually flat. Gold up $12, oil down $2 and change to get back inside of 100, so that's a plus. Lots and lots and lots of earnings announcements. General Electric beat analyst expectations on Friday, but missed their revenue numbers, so their shares were off pretty significantly. Google missed quite a bit, particularly on revenue, but revenue and earnings as well. Share price targets were lowered pretty much across the board. But conversely, tech sector really did quite well today. Intel, IBM, Microsoft all beat estimates. So some good news there. Talbot surged quite a bit after talks that they are going to be taken over by some private capital. So good news in the retail sector there. In Europe, Greece, they have been telling us all week long that Greece is close to a deal with private creditors. Close to a deal with private creditors. We really expected to have it today, but did not get it. And then on the economic front, I know something you want to talk about a little later. Existing home sales up 5% for December, hitting an 11-month high. So good news there.
That's great news.
Yeah, good news there, and we can dig into that a little bit. Looking ahead to the week of the 23rd to the 27th, busy, busy, busy week. Monday, earnings from Halliburton, CSX, and Texas Instruments. Tuesday, we start a new FOMC meeting. So I know we talked about quantitative easing.
Whether or not there'd be another Q3.
Yep, that's a good time for them to talk about that. Earnings really kicks into high gear. DuPont, Johnson & Johnson, McDonald's, Apple, and Yahoo all on Tuesday. Wednesday, we get the FOMC meeting announcement, so we'll find out about QE3 and the likelihood of it. Earnings from Boeing, ConocoPhillips, Motorola, Amgen. Thursday, we get durable goods orders, jobless claims, earnings from AT&T and Caterpillar, among others. Friday, first look at fourth quarter GDP. That should be exciting.
Okay, I'm excited.
Earnings from Chevron, Procter & Gamble, D.R. Horton. So we'll get a little bit of a look as far as home builders' orders and sales and revenues and earnings. And so it's going to be a very, very busy week for the 23rd to 27th.
Lions, Tigers, and Bear, oh my.
Yeah, lots of
stuff.
Hey,
let me ask you this, Scott. You know, we hear when the news comes out that either the company, they either they hit their revenue number, but they didn't get their earnings, or they hit their earnings, but they didn't hit the revenue. It seems like almost like a shell game.
Yeah.
You know, but and then, oh, and we lowered the estimates. So what should the investor take from so far what you're seeing in the earnings seasons for this quarter?
Well, I think Q4 earnings have been mixed is really the best way to put it. We got off to a pretty hot start, and certain sectors have been pretty good. The banks have been a little bit better than expected here and there with a couple of exceptions. Techs have been really pretty strong. Transportations have been very strong, so we'll see about CSX next week. But the thing to keep in mind is that one quarter earnings announcements, the way we look at equities since we're investors, not traders, is that one quarter's earnings announcement really shouldn't be the impetus for a decision to sell. You can always, if you really want to get into it, you can look into the earnings announcements and look at the commentary by the CEO and the chairman of the board and all that stuff and find out what their view is for future business prospects. And that's a pretty good way to really kind of gauge where a company may be going. But one quarter here or there, you know, it could be a matter of a charge-off. It could be a matter of bad weather. It could be a matter of an earthquake in Japan. One quarter's earnings announcements really should not be a real decision-making factor.
And you think with where, you know, you talked about the Fed and their position, you the last time we talked about it, you didn't think there's really much of an expectation that the Fed's going to step in and buy more of the mortgage-backed securities?
I don't think so, because I think they are worried about inflation if they flood the system with money. And the economy seems to be doing okay. It doesn't really seem like it needs a real boost right now.
Well, the Wall Street Journal tends to agree with you, Scott.
Oh, terrific.
They have an article they talked about that it does not look like that the Fed's going to buy the bonds and that the inflation fears have kind of eased up and the job picture looks better.
Yeah.
And we've, you know, you see a continuing decline since 2009, where joblessness, the unemployment was up over 600, the unemployment number.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's come down steadily.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, we even had a good number on Friday for our home state here of Florida. The unemployment rate in the state dropped below 10% for the first time in quite some time.
Because it had been quite a bit higher than the average.
It had been, particularly in the housing boom, because we had so many people employed in construction. So we're really making a good recovery from all that.
What should people be thinking about the fact that home sales are at 11-month high?
Well, I think it's good news. I mean, if you really dig into that number, there are some things that cause a little bit of concern. So, for example, the median prices are at $166,100. That's back to where they were in 2002. So there's no more value in homes than there was in 2002. That's a long time to go flat. If you look at the number of cash transactions, 31% of purchases. The number of distressed sales, 32% of purchases. So it's not like it's a real robust housing market.
But stuff is starting to move.
We have to run some of this inventory out, and the more rents continue to go up, the more people will look to buy. But it has to be easier for people to borrow money to really make that a sustainable trend.
And inflation, which has been tame, if inflation kicks up, then that will drive up the rent.
It will continue to drive up the rent, but there's so much demand in rent market that it's got that sort of organic push already.
But there's a lot of supply, too.
It's getting there, and across the street here we're building, but a lot of what's being built, like this one across the street, is more government-subsidized housing than anything.
Well, so if the pricing is back to where it was in 2002, you're telling me basically that we had a dead decade.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, more when we come back from our break. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read will find you clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. That number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Okay. Let's say that interest rates do start to trickle up, or that all of this buying high demand for bonds starts to ease up. That means that the bond prices will start to go down.
Yep.
Yields will go up. Yep. But that means that somebody who has bonds could potentially experience a loss.
They could.
And we've seen that in the past. It's not fictitious. It's not theoretical. We've seen actual losses for bonds on people's financial statements.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when we look at a bond and its face value and its face yield, that takes into account buying it at issue and holding it to maturity. A lot can happen in between there.
So the big question for our listeners is, what do they do when bonds start to become less attractive as a kind of a place where you stuff all your safe money or money that you want to earn interest on?
Yeah, well, if you're going to be a bond investor and you're looking to reduce volatility, the easiest ways to do that are to increase your credit quality, because lower credit quality is inherently more volatile.
And because it acts like more like a stock.
Right.
Because you're more tied. The value of that bond is going to be more tied to the expected viability
right.
of that stock.
Simply put, risk.
Risk. So it's more sensitive to the risk aspects of
right.
the underlying company
That's right.
who issued the bond.
That's right.
Okay.
So you have that. And then the other thing you can do is really, really shorten up your durations. Because if you give somebody a loan and they're supposed to pay you back in 6 months, well, you're going to know in 6 months whether or not you're going to be paid back. If you give them a loan and they're supposed to pay you back in 30 years, a lot can happen between now and 30 years from now, so there's more uncertainty.
Obviously, the easy example here is Greece.
Yeah, right.
You know, that'd be a real simple example. Buying their six-month debt would be a whole lot safer than buying their 10 or 20 or 30-year bond.
Yeah, and then for yield investors, there are other places that you can look. If you can take a little bit higher degree of volatility, you can look at some of the traditional dividend payers like utilities and REITs and things like that that are in the equity market.
What about the blue chips?
I mean, the blue chips are there, and they traditionally pay good dividends, but equity, you always have to remind equity investors that what happened in 2008 and 2009, 2001 and 2002 can happen anytime.
Let me go a step further. Can and will happen again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll remind everybody, and I didn't check the market to see where GE is, what their price is at right now, but I will always remember that GE went down to $5 a share. And so, and that's would be considered a blue chip stock.
Well, we used to consider AIG a blue chip, Kodak, GM, Ford, all were considered blue chips.
They closed at a little over $19 a share on Friday. So, and their dividend now is on, what is it? Well, that's 3.5%,
yeah.
But that's on the current price. So
that's
if
right.
you bought your GE at $35 a share,
yeah.
your dividend percent, you're still getting the same 68 cents a share,
right.
but your yield is very different than the guy or gal that buys it when it's at $19 or $20 a share. And a lot of times people get this mixed up. Everybody's yield on an individual stock is different.
Yeah.
It's based on what you paid for it. So if you hear about GE paying a 3.5% yield, that may or may not be. In fact,
right.
it's probably not the yield that somebody's getting on their
right.
their GE stock.
And it's just simply the dividend divided by the purchase price.
That's exactly right.
The dividend.
It is a dollar amount right. of the dividend
that's right.
divided by the current market price for that stock.
Yeah, so that's what happens in capital markets, what we call capital markets. You can even do covered calls if you want to get a little crazy, but there are other parts of the market that you're more in tune with than I am.
Well, over on the, you know, we are a hybrid, ladies and gentlemen. You know, Holland Financial, we do both investments and we do insurance and we do the planning and all that. So my perspective comes from doing kind of both sides. Some people focus just on insurance or some people focus just on investments. We do both because I think that's what you need to do to create a comprehensive plan. So with that said, Scott, one of the things that we look at is when we're building a portfolio or we're building a plan for somebody to get the income they need, one of the things we look at is, okay, how do we address this potential for what I call bond devaluation, the risk of loss in bonds, if interest rates go up or if demand for bonds starts to fall? And what would cause demand for bonds to start to fall? People willing to go over in the stock market, right?
Right? That's right.
So,
another credit downgrade, or something else going on.
So, what does that mean? Well, that means that we need to diversify. And so, besides the investment piece, we can certainly look to the insurance world, maybe for some fixed annuities or something like that, just to diversify. Because, see, the big difference between an annuity and a bond. I'm not talking about an income annuity where you're getting income payments, but I'm talking about just a straight up deferred fixed annuity. You put your money in, the company pays you interest, and you may take the interest later or do something else with it or turn it on for income and draw it out of your lifetime. So the big difference between an annuity and a bond is that the fixed annuity will not go down based on interest rates or the stock market. The bond can and will fluctuate based on current market conditions, the health of the company that issued the bond, and also the prevailing interest rates and whether they're moving.
In the bond market, we saw during the credit crunch.
Oh my gosh, 2008, we saw a literal, ladies and gentlemen, this is, I'll always remember this too, is that, and Scott obviously does, 2008, we literally saw the stock, the equity side of the market, the bond market, we saw some situations where it literally froze up.
You couldn't sell a bond.
Yeah, so think about a lake and you're trying to fish and guess what? The lake just freezes up completely.
Yeah, and if you had a bond that you were trying to sell for cash purposes, you could not find a buyer.
I always remember one distinct client we were working with, he really was in a bad spot and we could not sell the bond. Nobody wanted it.
Yeah.
So this is the reality of the world we live in, is that could happen again, which is why we're such big believers in being diversified and having some money in bonds and stocks, mutual funds. We do some stuff with real estate through real estate investment trusts or mutual funds that hold them.
Yeah.
Not big fans. I'm not a big fan of privately held REITs.
Yeah.
I like the publicly held REITs, or better yet, I like an electronically traded fund or a mutual fund that invests in publicly traded REITs.
Yeah, we're having some liquidity issues right now with private REITs. You know, it's not a matter of just calling up and saying, "Hey, send me a check." It takes a long time to get money out of those things.
I'm going to go out on a ledge here and say almost impossible.
Yeah.
Because you have to get in line behind whoever else wants their money, and they only redeem so much per quarter.
That's
and
right.
They may not redeem any.
Yeah, that's right.
It's really dependent on somebody else wanting to buy it.
Yeah.
And so that is not a good place to be.
Yep.
But a good place to be is listening to this program, and we'll be right back after this short break.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional, and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 13 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
And we're back. No fancy music to segue us into this segment. We'll work on that, Lisa. But I do have a question for Scott. Actually, it's more of a statement that we were talking about on the break. So I'm going to run for office.
Oh.
But before I do, I'm going to go put a bunch of money in the Cayman Islands. How's that sound?
You may regret it. I'm guessing you may regret that.
Oh, politicians amaze me in some of the things they do. And, you know, they're human like all of us, and I guess they're going to make their share of mistakes. But sometimes I'm like, you know, what were you thinking?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a silly one. I mean, you know, his opposition, Governor Romney's opposition really has done a good job of sort of separating him from the common person. It really seems to be taking hold. If you look at the exit polls from Iowa and New Hampshire, he did significantly better in the wealthiest counties than his average, and significantly worse in the poorest counties than his average. So some of the numbers are starting to bear fruit for some of the jabs that are being taken at him.
Well, and again, it's just an interesting thing to see, and it puzzles me sometimes how the politicians behave. But how does that affect your pocketbook? Well, you know what? I don't know if I have a real tie-in, but I just thought it was interesting in what happened. And you know, I guess the thing that I observe is, it's not a left, it's not a right, it's not a liberal, it's not a conservative, it's not Democrat, it's not Republican that gets it right all the time or that has all the answers. And hopefully through this process that we get to do once every 4 years, which is so much fun, we end up with people that will lead this country and give us some solid financial solutions. I guess that's really what it's about, is I'd like to see some real strength come out and say, here is my plan that's going to stimulate this economy.
Yeah, I don't think any of this stuff really is reflective of him trying to cheat the IRS or anything like that. But certainly the media is on him for it.
Hey, listen, if you got a little fire, they're going to pour the gasoline on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned the economies. Yeah, we've been talking about different size economies.
Yeah.
And our economy, you know, being, where are we at, about $15 trillion.
Yep.
And, you know, how big is the European Union there? Well, they're around about $16 trillion
now. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they're contracting a little bit, so we'll see how they how big that stays. And we say China's, what are they, over $10 trillion if you do it on an equivalent parity basis, all according to the CIA World Factbook. I thought this was very interesting. When we talked about Italy having about a $1.8 trillion economy, Spain. We talked recently about Indonesia.
Yeah.
Okay, we were going to talk about that a little bit on today's show, weren't we?
We certainly can.
We've got a little time. I want to get to that because they are a real turnaround.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
That I want to talk about. Before we get to that, though, my point is that when we start talking about how there's only 16 countries, and I'm including the European Union as one country, which they're not, but there's only 16 that are in the trillion-dollar club, okay? So when we start talking about how big countries' economy are, we're talking about how much gross domestic product they have. Here's what I thought was very interesting, and I think our listeners will find this also interesting, is when you look at the trillion-dollar club, there's only, like I said, 16. But here's what's interesting. California, if it were its own country, has just under a $2 trillion economy, which would put them ahead of... Italy. It makes it bigger than Italy, Mexico, South Korea, Spain, Canada. California is bigger than Canada.
Can you imagine if they didn't have the support of the federal government? We wouldn't be talking about Greece and Italy. We'd be talking about California.
You know what? You're probably right. Texas is just over $1.2 trillion. New York is $1.1 trillion. And good old Florida, we're at about $750 billion. Now you say, well, $750 billion doesn't sound like as much. Well, it's bigger than Poland, the Netherlands. We're bigger than Saudi Arabia, Argentina, Egypt, Pakistan. Anyway, kind of an interesting thing. Again, what do people do with that piece of knowledge? Well, I think it's important for us to understand just how big the United States economy is and how much impact we have on the world. We've talked about the dollar, the falling dollar, and what kind of impact that is. The strengthening dollar against the European Union's, the euro falling, going down. And so we're seeing that strength. And what does it do? It causes the value or the price put on oil to change.
Yeah.
We're still a big indicator or have a big effect. The value of the dollar has an effect on how oil sells.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to look into this too much today, but I did see a news headline that said Iran and India had agreed to do an oil purchase in Indian currency.
That's interesting.
A direct purchase. I didn't get a chance to read too much into it, but I thought it was interesting as well.
So there are attempts by other countries, and of course China's probably trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm sure they would love that.
So anyway, that's some interesting things but let's get to the talk a little bit about, we've got a little bit of time before we get to the next segment, on Indonesia. A real turnaround story. They were really hammered as an emerging, now of course they're back on track, their economy is over $1 trillion.
Yeah, they're a big one.
And so they're in that $1 trillion club, and I had quite a stack of stuff on them, but they really turned it around. They were really hammered in the 90s.
Yeah, 1997, sovereign debt was at junk levels. They were in really, really bad.
And a lot of it, right?
A lot of it. They were in bad, bad, bad shape, and basically the whole thing collapsed. The whole economy collapsed. The sovereign bond market for Indonesian bonds just collapsed. And what they did was they got back on track. They instituted some democracy, some democratic process. They got some stability of leadership in there. And they really did a very, very good job of controlling their budget and their balance sheet to get things back on track. And in the last week, they've been moved all the way back up into investment grade credit at this point.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, 15 years basically.
I applaud it. I think it's fantastic. Yeah, their yield on their 10-year government bond had gone up over 8.5-9%. Now it's down to about 6%.
They just did a 30-year auction at 5 and change.
Wow.
So things have come down a lot.
That's a big deal. Now they did it by controlling. They did some of their own reining in of their government spending.
Yeah. Now to contrast that, 5 and change for a 30-year, Italy's 30 is around 7, Spain's is around 6.
Okay.
So what the market is saying is that they think Indonesia's economy is more stable than Spain and Italy.
And that their bonds are safer.
Right.
Well, one of the things I found interesting when I did a little bit of research on Indonesia that I did not know is that they have a flatter tax rate structure. And so that really, then it's a lot simpler. They've only got four brackets. Their highest bracket is only 30%, and their corporate income tax rate is 25%.
And debt to GDP, 90% in 2000, 25% today. You love that, don't
very,
you?
Very, I do. Very interesting. All right, we're going to take a short break, come back. We've got your two-minute warning.
Do you ever think about the effects inflation will have on your retirement savings? Can you remember when gas was just $1 per gallon? Or when you could buy a house for less than what most cars sell for these days? Is it possible to keep pace with inflation and protect a portion of your portfolio from stock market volatility? A registered investment advisor can show you your options. Certified financial planner David Holland and his team of fee-based investment advisors are ready to help. Schedule your free consultation today by calling 888-747-PLAN. That number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit us at www.davidholland.com.
9 cents. That's it. 9 cents is all it takes to feed a person if you donate wisely. Have you ever been approached on the street or the side of the road by somebody asking for a couple of bucks and thought, where's my money going? Well, when you choose to donate to Halifax Urban Ministries, that same $2 can buy 20 meals and will be used to win the fight against homelessness. I am a proud supporter and I want to encourage you to put your money towards something real. Visit HalifaxUrbanMinistries.org to find out how you can help or call 386-252-0156. 386-252-0156.
With so many financial products and services available today, do you ever wonder what the best income strategy is for your situation? Call Holland Financial to receive a free educational DVD on retirement income strategies. Certified financial planner David Holland discusses some of the income planning strategies used by retirees and baby boomers. The DVD is available free of charge, hassle, or pressure by simply calling 888-747-PLAN. Again, that's 888-747-7526.
This is your two-minute warning.
All right, here's your two-minute warning. Well, you know, we talked earlier about earnings season. Well, guess what season it is now? It is financial seminar season. And so I get, by way of my parents, which is very convenient because they are in the age bracket that gets a lot of the financial invitations, I get the invitations from financial advisors, and I'm holding one in my hand. And so I want to caution you, ladies and gentlemen, to be very, very careful about these seminars. Some of the troubles and challenges and bad behavior that goes on that the AARP and that FINRA, the Financial Regulatory Organization, the Securities and Exchange Commission, State of Florida, and other states, their security and insurance departments, that get them anxious and concerned is some of the behavior that goes on at seminars. Not everybody is there to help you. Sad to say, I know. Now, what I want you to be careful of is to, number one, if you want to go to one, fine, go to one. They all pretty much offer a free meal, a nice meal. A lot of them are nice places. But you need to read carefully. If you're really going there to get financial advice, or you're really in the mood and in the position of looking for maybe a new advisor, or you want a second opinion on your finances, be careful. First thing I would do is, if I get one of these and I were age appropriate to be wanting to go to one of these seminars, and if I weren't in the financial business myself, I would say, okay, I'll go. The very first thing I would look at before I read another thing is I would say, let me see who is presenting this seminar. What are their names? And what? So you go right over the computer. What is their name and what are their credentials? You better see credentials, and if you don't, you need to check and look. Do a quick Google search and see if you can find their website. Don't waste your time in some sort of uncomfortable situation where you shouldn't have gone. Look at who the person is. Do they have any credentials? What are the credentials? Be very careful before you go and look at the topics and see what is there. And I'll spend more time on another show talking about the details of this, but please be careful going to these seminars and make sure you know. And if they don't have somebody listed, you let me know who the names of the people are. That's a big red flag. We'll talk next time on the show. Thank you for being with me.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 ton. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe.
soul to the company store.